on topics of philosophy, remembering that philosophy is the search for the truth. So the second topic is logic, which in the Vaishnava philosophy goes under the name Anuman. So logic, in its basic definition, means thinking according to established rules. Of course, the mind is very supple, very flexible, and can think in so many ways. The mind is able to associate all kinds of topics together. So the question is whether there is any sanity, any reasonable pattern to that associating that the mind is doing. Crazy people who are, or at least used to be, I don't know about now, but they used to put them in institutions, maybe now more they let them go free, because the distinction between crazy people and normal people is being erased more and more. But crazy people typically are people who make mad associations. They associate thoughts and objects together in a completely unrestrained way, and thus they live in a very bizarre world. So the basic definition of logic are rules of thought by which, yes, since the point of philosophy is to come to the truth, so rules of thought by which a human being can approach the truth. Now, according to our Vaishnava philosophy, there are two kinds of logic. One is called laukika, which means in Sanskrit ordinary or conventional. And the other is shastra mulaka. So this is not hard to understand. Shastra, of course, means the scriptures, Vedic scriptures. And mula means root. So that logic, that thinking, which is rooted in the revealed scriptures, is shastra mulaka, and this is transcendental logic. So now I would like to explain, giving examples, the difference between the two. So you remember in the last session about epistemology, or how we know, how we can know. So I talked about the modern process of epistemology, in which everything is reduced down to mechanism, because their values, the values that they have, are simply physical forces and numerical values, numbers, mathematics. So you put these two together and that spells mechanism. So there is a what we call a preconception or presupposition. It's already there in the mind before one studies anything outside, is that truth or reality is seen in mechanism. Wherever we find something mechanical, then that is the real substance, that is the real thing. So I explained that in detail the other day. So this is the modern attitude, where they see mechanism, where they may see machine, then they think, oh yes, now we're getting down to something. Now this is reality. So this is also true about logic. So this laukika logic, or ordinary logic, it is mechanical. And it is in reference to the physical appearances of things in this world. I'd like to now give an example. By laukika logic, scientists have come up with an explanation of lunar eclipse. You know, the lunar eclipse is when at night, on a full moon night, we see a dark, shadowy blackness it gradually covers the surface of the moon. The full moon becomes blotted out by this black, shadowy darkness. So we have a Vedic explanation for that, which I'll come to. But the modern scientists have conceived of an explanation for eclipse using Laukika or mechanical logic. And so just to be brief, they say that there's the sun and the earth is revolving around the sun, and the moon revolves around the earth. So the moon is going around like this, and both earth and moon are going around the sun. So when, just as you see in this picture, when in the course of revolution it so happens that earth and moon are lined up, then the light of the sun being blocked by the earth here, then there's a shadow created, and this shadow in turn blocks the one half of the moon that is facing the earth. So what the scientists say is that shadowy blackness that is crossing over the disk of the moon and covering it is simply the shadow of the earth. This is their explanation. And it makes logical sense. They build models of it. And you can even crank it with your with your hand. And there's a light here where the sun is. And everything works out. So therefore, because the basic value here is mechanism. Therefore, they say this is true. This is a fact. Because we reduce everything down to mechanical explanations. Here's a mechanical explanation which explains the eclipse, so it must be true. But you see, there's a presupposition here. The presupposition is first of all, you have to accept mechanism as being the ultimate, the most solid, the most reasonable explanation for what is happening in the world. And as I tried to show you in the class before, that doesn't add up. There are many, many things in human life which cannot be explained by mechanism. You see, so this is why this type of outlook we call reductionism. It's reducing human experience, deliberately reducing human experience to mechanism, and anything outside of that, they say, that's illusion, that's your sentimentality, like, what stands outside of mechanism, obviously? Consciousness, you see? So as soon as one starts to speak about consciousness, then they say consciousness must reduce to the mechanism of the body, and otherwise it's just an illusion, just a hallucination. So this is the way science formulates our experience. Yes, so this is the presupposition. That things must be reduced to mechanism. So that's the Laukika explanation, but that can never be perfect because our senses are not perfect. It depends on our senses and on our minds, and they are never perfect. So there is always some doubt, or at least an intelligent person should always have some doubt about so-called logical, Laukika, logical explanation. Just like, give an example, which is often seen in criminal detection. The police detectives are investigating crimes. So they very often are accusing someone not on the basis of direct evidence, that someone has directly seen this person do the crime, or that this person has confessed, I have done it. But it is circumstantial evidence. In other words, his fingerprints were there, and this and that, and this and that, and they add it all together, and there's no other logical or reasonable suspect that they can consider. So they accuse this person, you have committed this crime. He's saying, I didn't do it. You see, and they're saying, but you can't explain. You can't give us a good a good excuse for yourself because the logic is against you. And so it happens quite repeatedly. Such a person, he brought before the court, the evidence is brought forward, and the judge or the jury decides, you're guilty. And he's protesting his innocence, but no matter, you go to jail. And then maybe 10 years after he's been in jail for 10 years, they find some new evidence and realize, oh, we made a mistake. You see. So you can see how this laukika reasoning, it always, to an intelligent person, should be open to doubt. So then, Shastra Mulika, that which is based in Shastra. Now, I will go back to this eclipse example, read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which gives not only, because really when we're talking Shastra Mulika logic, we're not, the issue here is not one mechanical model versus another. You see, there is in the Vedic cosmology, which you will hear, a different explanation for how eclipses take place. That is there. But this is not really the crucial point. This is not really what Shastra Mulika logic is all about. To say, oh, this model of eclipse is wrong. There's a different model, a Vedic mechanical model that is right. So I will read. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 49. Canto 4, talks between Narada and King Prachini Barhishat, text 69. So Krishna consciousness means constantly associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in such a mental state that the devotee can observe the cosmic manifestation exactly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead does. Such observation is not always possible, but it becomes manifest exactly like the dark planet known as Rahu, which is observed in the presence of the full moon. So this is actually a very deep verse with a lot of things to consider. So one point is association with the Lord, sattva eka nishte manasi bhagavat. So one should associate with the Lord in a particular mental state. That is referring to anuman, or logic, reasonable thinking. And so how can we associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Through the mind, again, Shastra Mulika. That is by learning the logic of the revealed scriptures. So then, there's a very nice example given here. It's the example of the eclipse. But I would like to explain this in a way so that you'll really understand how this Shastra Mulika logic works. Now again, there's this mechanical model. There's the sun, and there's the earth, and then there's the moon, which is covered by the earth, by this dark planet, Rahu. But so you can appreciate this, but that's, making this point is not really what we have to learn from Shastra Mulika logic. Again, it's not a question of mechanical models. What we see in this verse is that this is an analogy. This is an analogy being given. The analogy is that the moon, the moon is like the state of full Krishna consciousness. The full moon is being compared to God consciousness, when the consciousness of the soul is completely uncovered. And there is nothing blocking the eternal relationship between the jiva and the Supreme Lord. So this is the analogy being given. Now, yes, but something is covering in this material existence. There is this dark planet, Rahu. So what does this dark planet symbolize? It symbolizes the cosmic manifestation or the material energy in total. The Maya Shakti, the material energy, is covering our direct perception of the Supreme Lord. Now the verse says, the dark planet Rahu is observed in the presence of the full moon. So on an eclipse night, I suppose most of you have had the opportunity to see an eclipse. So what you see on the eclipse is you see this darkness, dark disk. Now how can you see that? This is the crucial question that's being answered in this verse. And this is the analogy we have to learn here. How, on a dark night, consider this, it's a dark night, and the moon, the full moon, which is of course light, brilliant, has been covered by a dark disk. So how can one see the eclipse? How is it possible? Because it's a dark background and a dark foreground. So we might think we should just see nothing, just darkness, just blackness. How is it that we can see the eclipse? Yes?
By logic.
No. Well, yes. but not the way you're trying to present it. Yes?
Because the moon is there and shining through the
night. Exactly. That is the point. There is a halo. And then, now we can say Lalitanath Prabhu is right. His answer was right. Because in the human form of life, you see, although our direct vision of Krishna is blocked by the material energy, in the human form of life particularly, we are blessed with a halo. That halo is the human mind, the advanced human mind. It is abhas, this is called. Abhas means a reflection or an effulgence around. It's called abhas. So the abhas represents anuman, anuman or logical thinking. So the human mind has the capacity, different from that of dogs and cats and all these lower forms of life, the human mind has the capacity to inquire, what's behind this? You see? This question is, in other words, why? You see? Why? Why is something blocking my vision of this luminous moon behind? And here's the point. This is laukika or mechanical logic. Here there is no why. You see? Here, they're content to come up with a mechanical model which explains the blocking of the sun, of the moon by shadow. But there's no further question. Why is that happening? Why do we experience that? What is the point? What is the meaning? So this question, why? Why do I exist? Why do I have senses? Why do I have a mind? What is the point of this life? These questions can only be answered here. So you see, this is the point of this analogy. It's not really to give us a different mechanical model of why there are lunar eclipses, but it's an analogy that the moon represents Krishna consciousness. It is being blocked by something. So according to Vedic astronomy, that is Rahu. And we notice this because of the halo around the moon. And that halo is the enhanced consciousness of the human being. So then, guided by Vedic logic, the Vedic explanation, we can understand that behind this dark shadow of Maya, there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as one becomes well established, as this verse says, Krishna consciousness means constantly associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in such a mental state that the devotee can observe the cosmic manifestation exactly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead does. So this is called Shastra Shakshush. You see, seeing the world as the Lord does. That's the answer to the riddle of the fifth canto, the fifth canto description of the universe, which many devotees still bang their heads against the wall about, trying to figure out. But the answer is quite simple, that the fifth canto is describing the universe the way Krishna sees it. You see, it's a superior point of view. We can give the example of, you know, when you mix white powder with black powder, see, white flour with charcoal together in equal amounts, then according to human vision, you get a powder that looks like it's gray, or gray powder. That's what your senses tell you. And so when we ask, what is the color of this powder? You will insist, it is gray. But actually it is not. And that can be seen by looking at this powder under a microscope. You look under a microscope, you suddenly realize that the gray doesn't exist at all. There is no gray there. It is black and it is white. There are black grains of powder and there are white grains of powder and they are mixed together. So you see, from our human perspective, we're looking at it's like seeing the gray powder when we look at this universe. And this is the logic that comes out of this type of, you know, mechanistic, so-called scientific logic. And it works just like, yes, the powder looks gray. Can't argue, it looks gray. But is it really gray? No. You see, but you can only know that from a higher point of view, and that higher point of view is Krishna's. So that is the logic of the fifth canto in Srimad Bhagavatam. So the point here is that by our human reason, we get we have an understanding that there is something more to this world than what we can see or what we can figure out independently with our minds. So what is that something more? It is revealed in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we should associate with the Lord by becoming acquainted with the philosophy that he teaches, with his point of view, his view of things. We should adopt that point of view. We should become learned in the scriptures so that we see this world exactly as Krishna sees it. And then when we can see that way, Shastra Shakshu, through the eyes of Shastra, then what happens is Krishna being pleased with us, being pleased with that line of thinking, which is, in other words, as we were speaking of this morning, which means one is always remembering Krishna. That's simply what it means. One is always remembering Krishna in everything. So being pleased with his devotee's remembrance, then the Lord causes this dark shadow of Maya to move away, to move out of the way. And then one can see directly, in this analogy, the full moon of one's relationship with Krishna. So this is, I want to keep it simple, I hope it was simple. This is our Vaishnava understanding of logic in brief. So because it's complicated, or can be a complicated subject matter, I thought I would stop here and just ask if you have any questions. Yes?
As far as I know, you cannot see the moon when it's a new moon. And if it is not full moon or positive, you cannot see the moon.
How does that relate to what I presented? I'm lost.
When the shining comes from behind the darkness.
You think she meant the new moon when he meant the covering of rubble?
You don't know the difference between new moon and eclipse, in other words.
Yeah.
You do. You know the difference between new moon and eclipse. Huh? It is different. It is different. Yes. This is why I'm leaving so much time for questions. Yes.
I thought that we normally use the word Nyaya for logic and not Anuman. What is Nyaya used in Anuman?
Nyaya is one of the six systems of Vedic philosophy. Actually, in the Bhagavatam we find the term, what is it? I've forgotten it. There's another term. Brahma gave the rules of logic. But I'm speaking of Anuman, but there is a proper Anuman, yeah, it's a general term. It can mean just thinking of the mind. But what we want to speak of in this presentation is that Anuman which leads one to the truth. So that Anuman must be guided by scripture. So the school of philosophy called Nyaya is a wrong philosophy. It doesn't guide one to the absolute truth. So we generally don't find in Srila Prabhupada's books that term being used in a positive way. The Nyayis means the dry logicians. There's another term, it just escapes my mind right now. The logic that Lord Brahma taught, mentioned in the third canto. Are there any other? Yes?
I wondered if Sastra Mudra is based on consciousness, or of course it is, but acceptance of consciousness. Well, I have a hard time understanding Sastra Mudra.
Sastra Mudra logic. It means the teachings of the scriptures. It means thought. Our thought, your thought, human thought, which follows the teachings of the revealed scriptures. When your thought is trained, you know, as I said, we can think anything. That's the basic definition of Anuman, just thinking. And you can think any crazy thing, you know, associate things together. That's what crazy people do. But there must be a difference between just mad free thinking and thinking which actually brings one closer and closer to the absolute truth. So that thinking which brings us closer and closer to the absolute truth is Shastra Mulika. That thought which is rooted, Mula means root, so it is rooted in Shastra. So just as Lord Krishna, he's teaching Bhagavad Gita, the proper philosophy for the human being, proper way of thought for the human being, proper associations. This will bring us to the truth. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Guru Maharaj, you gave the example of the moon and the halo as being analogical. You gave the example, but is the whole cosmology of the fifth canto to be understood similarly as analogical, or does it also function in a mechanistic way?
Well, it's not mechanistic. It is a form of the Lord. I mean, in this material world, there is a mechanistic aspect to things. Prakriti, the word even refers, it means that which is manufactured. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna calls this body yantra, which means machine. So there is a mechanistic aspect. But the description of the universe in the fifth canto is actually a form of the Lord. And you'll find a prayer addressing that form of the Lord in the fifth canto. So it's a worshipable form, like a deity form, but in the heavens, universal form. So ultimately, to understand that form, it cannot be done simply by mechanistic logic. Any other? Yes?
For a person who bases his life on this Sastra Mulaka, is there any use for him in this Lankika?
Yes. In practical affairs? Just like cooking? Cooking, you have to use this Laukika logic. It's, you know, there to cook there are measurements that must be made, and there are step-by-step procedure. It's mechanical process.
What about when you find that this Laukika and Sastramulaka seem to contradict the Nietzsche's practice?
Oh, then the Laukika you dispense with. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't. As I gave the example of the powders. There is no actual contradiction, except just in our perception. There's a contradiction only in as much as we insist that our way of seeing things is absolute, which is a rather ridiculous position to take. Yes?
And what is it that we perceive as lunar phases? I don't know the
Shastra says
about that.
Well, that's a question sort of outside of the subject matter.
Yeah.
I already said that's not the point. The point is not to understand the mechanics of astronomy. Yes.
Yeah, about also on this point, when Lauka predicts Shastra Mulaka, I can take the moon example. And Prabhupada says that according to Princess Balakrishna, the moon is further away than the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So we can accept that. But according to Laukika logic, you mean look at the moon and the phases of the moon, they would actually be different if actually according to Shastra, the moon is further away than the
So what you're saying, the gray powder is really gray. That's what you're saying. That's what you want to say. The gray powder is really gray because that's the way I see it. I mean, that's the point here, right? You want to insist that the gray powder must be gray because we don't see it any other way. Well. Yes?
Is it the life that great devotees or advanced devotees, they have this actual perception of the universe, such like Sasas and Krishna?
Yes. The great devotees, for example, Lord Brahma, he sees the universe directly that way. Now, whether or not you or me will ever attain that direct vision, that's another question. Lord Brahma is qualified, very, very qualified, most qualified jiva in the whole universe. Therefore, he sees things that way directly. But we can become Shastra Shakshush. We can see the universe through the eyes of Shastra. And by that, you go back home, back to Godhead. And that's what's important. The important thing is not to be able to say, I've seen the universe as it is directly. The important thing is to be situated in loving devotion to Krishna. Yes?
If you only have a partial understanding or knowing, knowledge of the Shastra, and then try to use that for understanding what is happening now and what I should do, what will happen is it will I act
this knowledge is like, it's compared to an ocean of nectar in which even one drop is an ocean of nectar. So if you can actually taste just one drop, then you've tasted the ocean of nectar. Is it just like there is so much detailed information in the Shastra, but the essence is Krishna Aika Sharana. We should surrender to Krishna as our only shelter. You see, finally, this is even you see the great sages. You find in the Srimad Bhagavatam that as Krishna is unfolding his pastimes, even the great sages, even Lord Brahma, he is confronted with the glories of Krishna that baffle him. You see, he becomes baffled. And then what does he do? Just like when, after he tried to steal away the cows and cowherd boys of Krishna, and then he realized that Krishna had expanded himself into the same cows and cowherd boys, and each one of the cows and cowherd boys was Narayan himself, God himself. When he saw that, he became so baffled that all he could do was offer his obeisances to the lotus feet of the Lord. So even Brahma runs out of, you know, he reaches the limit of his intelligence. And then we're just left with that, surrender to Krishna. Yeah?
Does he try to change his, does he try to bring in some more shastra to try to, or does he only do that, just surrender? Or that he may think that now I'm not complete in my understanding.
Well, you know, that's okay. There's what's called Bhakti Jnana Mishra. There's devotion which is mixed with jnana, which is exactly what you have described. Basically, he's a devotee, but he's trying to understand, trying to understand in the intellect. Everything. Now, the intellect has to be engaged in Krishna's service. That's true. So the process is not, you know, it's not like it's Maya. But at the same time, what is the ultimate goal of Krishna consciousness? It is prema bhakti. It is to serve Krishna in loving devotion. So the residence of Vrindavan, who are the prema bhaktas, they're not very much concerned. I mean, they do have some talks among themselves about who Krishna is after he performs some very wonderful pastime. So sometimes they say, maybe he's a demigod, or maybe he's even an incarnation of Narayan. Then finally Nanda Maharaj will say, well, whatever, but he's my son. Ah, yes. And then they will settle. That's their final decision, that Krishna is the son of Nanda Maharaj. And therefore, what does that mean? Therefore, he's the object of our love. You see? So this is prema bhakti. That's the final conclusion. And the jnana mishra bhakti is always looking for newer and newer angles, you know, newer... And I don't want to say that that's bad, but they're not quite the same thing. You see, so the actual goal of this process is to come to prema bhakti. Yes?
How much do I have to understand the shastra to come to this point of accepting and leave jnana?
Well, you don't... As long as you're trying to understand the Shastra in that way, you have to give that up, you see. So, one should try to understand. That's what Krishna says in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He explains this to Uddhava. He says, as long as one is not liberated from the bodily conception of life, then one should rely upon what he calls the acts of analytical knowledge. So the body, the bodily conception is compared to a tree. And the axe is this knowledge which will cut down the tree, which is, the axe head is set upon a wooden staff, a wooden handle, which is taken from the same tree. You see? So this analytical knowledge, it is wielded from the bodily standpoint. You see, you take a limb from the tree, makes an axe handle, put the axe head on it, and then you use it to cut down the tree. So all of this is happening within the sphere of the conditioned outlook. You see? You cut down the tree, and then when the tree is cut down, when one is actually freed from the bodily concept, then Lord Krishna says, at that time, you should lay the axe down and not touch it again. Because then that is where, on the liberated platform, is where this prema bhakti begins. So yes, as long as we are conditioned, as long as we are identifying with the body, gross or subtle, then we have this analytical knowledge to help us get free of that. Yes?
And what is called the Brahma-Buddha platform?
Yes.
Yeah. The Navika platform is so necessary with philosophers, Western philosophers, they are situated. Does that bring them ever to the platform of Shastramula?
How will it do that?
Perhaps it's just, you know, and they can conclude that they must just recognize even without having it, the physical.
Well, the Shastra is a manifestation of Krishna's mercy. Guru, Shastra, Sadhu, Vakya, Chichite, Korya, Aikya. So we are, devotees are expected to bind their hearts firmly to Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, because these are manifestations of the Lord's mercy. So I don't follow the point of your question, really. Without mercy, one can never come to Krishna consciousness. So someone who's just speculating, oh, he may come to a point where he becomes totally frustrated. And because of his sincerity to know the truth, then Krishna, by his kindness, may bring him in contact with Guru, Shastra, Sadhu. But by his own, independently, he cannot.
And the point is that ultimately this whole philosophical attempt is more or less useless in most ways.
It has to be given up, yeah. But it can start as a search for knowledge, but just that one comes to a point to understand, I don't have the tools. You know, it's like in Western philosophy, Western theology, all of this, there is not the tools to understand Krishna, to know Krishna. It's just not there. So one may be sincere and admit this. Admit that this milieu of education is insufficient. So it's really a question of the state of the heart. If that person is sincere, then Krishna will help him. But Prabhupada points out in Nectar of Devotion introduction that often even they come to this point of seeing that Western philosophy, etc., is inadequate, then they just may become totally frustrated and then say there is no truth. You see, that's what most of them do. They just give up the attempt to understand an absolute truth. So attachment, fear, and then krodha, anger. Prabhupada in 4th chapter of Gita, verse 10, says those who become angry, they're frustrated with all sorts of spiritual speculations. Mm-hmm. And then they take to some intoxication, and their, as Prabhupada says, their effective hallucinations are what they have to call their spiritual realization. Just like the hippie movement in the 60s, these were young people who had gone through the entire Western educational system and had just become totally frustrated and then took to drugs and thought that they could see God through LSD or something like that. Yes?
You came to this point of realizing that this speculation doesn't give the absolute. So he said something like philosophy is dead, only a god can save us.
Hmm.
And I also heard that the very last part of his life, the very first devotee said, went to him and gave him the Bhagavad Gita. And then he was a great example.
Oh, this sounds like Heidegger. Well, I heard the story from the devotee who went and visited him. It was a little different than that. He had no mind left. He was totally senile. So all he could do, they showed him the Gita, and he was just, I know this book, I know this book. That's all he could say. Wasn't exactly ecstasy. Anyway, he was fortunate. He was definitely fortunate. Yes?
I heard that, and if you confirm that's true, that Plato actually reached the point of frustration with philosophical speculation at the end of his life.
I don't know about that.
He was quite despondent.
I don't know. Yes?
When I remember you 2 days ago, you described this about the epistemology of...
Epistemology.
...of modernism, and it is like Vaishan Sutra. And when I think the next day, I identify in my own thinking, this is how I think also here in my, like Vaishan, and in my devotional service. And then... So then, this is, I understand, this is what, this tree that I have to cut down, is that correct? So what is the the axe, what is the weapon that I should take to cut down?
Srimad Bhagavatam.
But it's so big.
Yes, it is so big because Maya is so big. Because we are so lost in our nonsense speculations. Actually, Srimad Bhagavatam has the answer to all conceivable questions that the human mind can conceive of. The answer is there in the Bhagavatam. So one has to simply absorb oneself in the Bhagavatam. Now, you know, there you can approach the Srimad Bhagavatam in that way, that I have a head full of questions that need to be answered, and you can search out the answers in the pages of the Bhagavatam, or you can just read the Bhagavatam as nectar. Anyway, the first will lead to the second in the end. But that's really the point, is that one should become attached to the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, and that message itself will purify the consciousness of all misgivings, all doubts, all ignorance. So, we should just, accept the Bhagavatam as our subject matter. Every mind must have a subject matter. So for the materialist, that's what Prabhupada said in his Bhagavad Dharma discourses. He explained, what is the difference between a materialist and a transcendentalist? Materialist reads the newspaper, transcendentalist reads the Srimad Bhagavatam. Everybody must have their subject matter. You see, so we must make this as our subject matter, our reference for knowledge. Mm-hmm.
What happens if I read the Srimad Bhagavatam and then I use to and then try to understand reality with the same kind of mentality or logic that I usually do when I use mathematics? Is it the same kind of thinking, or do I think some other way?
Well, if you actually read the Srimad Bhagavatam and actually absorb the message, then that mechanical, laukika logic is going to give way to transcendental logic. It must. What I said before was, you can approach the Bhagavatam in that way as a resource to answer all of your speculative questions. That's all right. But the point here is to simply become attached to the message of the Bhagavatam. That's one way to become attached. Kind of an intellectual searching way, that's fine. You become attached. But the point is to become attached. Another who's just more of a devotional mentality just wants to read about Krishna. That's all. So either way. Yes?
Before your presentation, I thought the logic was closely connected with the functions of mind and intelligence, and there are certain patterns of thought, etc., but it seems that we don't have to be so concerned about that.
No, we don't have to be so concerned about that. That, again, is the mechanical logic. There are books on logic. both in India and in the West, and they give all of these what they call syllogisms or patterns of arguments. But this is still within the realm of mental speculation. Yes? This is 4:29:69. Yes. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.